Good afternoon from the Sunshine City of St. Petersburg, Florida, back 100 years ago in 1925. One of the greatest music artists in the United States at the time was playing in our own backyards across the whole town. The man's name, Earl Gresh. And he was the band leader of a 12-piece dance orchestra that was one of the biggest names around in these parts back in the 1920s. Gresh had many careers over his lifetime, and the majority of which he shared with the folks of the Sunshine City. During his time, he also created some of the most unique tourist attractions around the Tampa Bay area for decades. The Wood Parade. But the most well-known and sustaining legacy of Gresh upon the area and nation at large is his band that he had from 1924 to 1928. For the majority of its existence, it was known as Earl Gresh and his Gangplank Orchestra. Back 100 years ago, on this very day of June 30th, 1925, Earl Gresh and his Gangplank Orchestra ended up making his first song for Columbia Records. In celebration of this anniversary, we have prepared a radio documentary about the music of Earl Gresh. I say we, because I'm not just doing this myself. I have with me the great-grandson of Earl Gresh's cousin, Jackson Gresh, here today. Jackson is not only related to Earl, but also the top authority on Earl Gresh's life. He is also the owner of the Gresh Music Archive on YouTube, in which he has meticulously and exhaustively worked to preserve and share Earl's surviving records with the world, in addition to other 78 RPM era recordings. Throughout this program, you will hear commentary from both of us, and you will get to hear the music of Gresh's orchestra as well. Here is Jackson now. Jackson, how did you find out that you have such a famous person in your family?
Well, it's great to be here, Chase. It was around this time a year ago, in 2024, I first found out about Earl Gresh and my family relationship to him. I had recently gotten back into collecting 78 RPM records, and I had told my grandfather about this. He made a comment to look into an Earl Gresh. And when I did, I had to call my great-grandfather, Gordon, and when I spoke to him, he remembered Earl and told me about how he met him. After speaking with Gordon that day, I knew it would be my mission to collect, archive, and preserve all of his known recordings. And I started that very month, and I bought Row Row Rosie, which coincidentally was his first record. And that was the record that is turning 100 years old today, and that is the record I have with me that we'll be playing right now. This one was recorded today, June 30th, 1925, exactly 100 years ago. It is Earl Gresh and his Gangplank Orchestra, starting off with Row Row Rosie on Sunshine 96.7 FM. Thank you.
Rosie, played by Earl Gresh and his Gangplank Orchestra, from June 30th, 1925, on Sunshine 96.7 FM. It's an iconic piece by the Gresh Unit. This record, once released, was a big hit across the U.S. Jackson, can you tell us why that was?
Of course, Chase. Before the advent of the electric microphone and audio recording, the process for recording music was a costly, expensive, and frustrating experience. Musicians would sing and play as loud as possible into a horn that would funnel the music down into a fine point, and that would mechanically vibrate a needle that would then cut the wax record. No electricity was required at all in this process, but it made everything sound muffled and tinny. By today's standards, it doesn't sound very good. 1925 really changed things with the secret unveiling of the Western Electric Recording System. Now, instead of requiring bands to play at uncomfortably loud and obnoxious levels, they could now comfortably play in a room with a small microphone, as if they were playing regularly to a live audience. Earl Gresh was one of Columbia's earliest electrically recorded artists, likely being one of the first 50 or so people ever to be recorded by an electric microphone. They were also only recorded for an electric microphone. Being that this was the early days for the process and the machines were scarce and scheduling was tight and expensive, this could explain why they only had 12 songs to their whole known discography.
It's no wonder why Columbia advertised them all over the place. Row, Row, Rosie was a great example of how clear-cut this new process was. But it's crazy even still having someone in your family who not only was amazingly popular for the Tampa Bay area and made some really good records in the 20s, but is also one of the first people to be recording with a microphone.
Yeah, it's truly incredible. And it wasn't just their recording process that was unique and innovative. The music style was also rather unheard of for the time. They were one of the earliest groups to have incidental singing from the rest of the band, where the whole band would sing along to the song with the lead singer. And they were also the first group to really popularize that idea.
For now, here's the flip side of that same record. This being She Was Just the Sailor's Sweetheart, recorded a month later on July 14th, 1925. Sunshine 96.7 FM.
Although she's barred from the Navy Yard,
She was just a sailor's sweetheart, played by Earl Gresh and his Gangplank Orchestra, a St. Pete area dance band that took the country by storm, 100 years back in the summer of 1925. Hailing from right here in St. Petersburg, Florida, you are listening to a tribute to Gresh's music here on Sunshine 96.7, created in part with Earl's own family descendant, Jackson Gresh. Sadly, neither of the two family members ever met, as Jackson was born 27 years after Earl's death in 1977. But Earl's cousin, Gordon, is still alive. He remembers Earl, and this is what he had to say about him.
One little quick disclaimer. Gordon always thought of Earl as his uncle, but they were actually cousins due to them sharing the same great-grandfather. It was simply a matter of their age gap that he calls them his uncle. All right. Well, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Do you remember how you met Earl, and can you tell me how that happened?
We were in, let's see, it was 1954 or 55, we were in St. Petersburg, and we went by, and I saw the Gresh Memorial, what place the store he had.
The Wood Parade, yeah.
Yeah, and so I stopped to see if he was related, and he was my uncle. And he showed us all around in there and everything, and then he gave us some free passes for other things, other attractions around. And we had a long, long visit with him. And he had a mural, not a mural, but a big picture on the wall of the Last Supper.
Oh, really?
He did it all in different colored woods, no paints whatsoever. And it was very interesting.
Sounds very impressive. Do you know, like, roughly what Earl was like his personality, character, anything like that?
Oh, no, because by the time I saw him, he was older.
I don't suppose he mentioned anything about having the jazz band or anything about the bandmates or anything like that.
I knew he had a jazz band, and I knew he did some recordings and stuff, which you have found, but I didn't know too much about him.
Yeah.
He raced speedboats.
He made it on the New York Times, too.
Yeah. He was pretty popular back then.
When you visited the place, did he ever show you any of his little creations he made, like the wooden purses or the fishing lures or anything like that?
Yeah, he showed us all the way through that place. Showed us about everything he had. He was interested in seeing us, so we were very interested in meeting him.
So, I take it you guys had some common family lineage back to, like, the days of, like, the cigar factory and stuff, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that was up in near Philadelphia, right?
Near Pittsburgh.
I remember I saw a photo of it online when I was researching it, because I thought, I never heard of the cigar factory. I thought it was super cool.
Well, it's interesting that you are interested in it. I don't have any pictures of him anymore. They got lost when they moved and stuff, but If I had them, I'd send them to you, but I don't have. I looked for them, and I couldn't find them.
Yeah, funny enough, you mentioned that. I actually have three of them I've been able to find over the past few years. There were some sheet music back in, like, the 20s. They didn't have, like, album art for, like, the later LPs, like, the bands would choose. And so what they would do is the bands, to, like, put their faces out, what they'd do is they'd put pictures of themselves on sheet music of songs they would sing. And then that would get publicity for them. And so I managed to collect three different sheets of sheet music that has either a picture of him with the band, a picture of him, and a picture of him holding his violin. So, yeah, I could send some scans of them if you'd like to see them. They're pretty cool, but yeah, it is great hearing from you. All right. Well, thank you, Gordon.
Okay, and it's good to hear from you.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. Have a great evening, all right? Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now let's hear another record of theirs.
Next up is a little tune from the summer of 1925 called Freshie. It's an upbeat, jolly song based on the 1925 Harold Lloyd film, The Freshman. After Freshie is Earl's fourth recording with Columbia Records, Help, recorded on September 22nd, 1925. Here is Freshie, followed by Help, by Earl Gresh and his Gangplank Orchestra. Then, after the break, we'll explore more of the Gangplank and what made it so special. Sunshine 96.7 FM. Thank you.
someone thinks he's someone, but to me he's mine. He's the freshman, the lonely first year freshman, but I didn't let go he, for I could never see. Why do they all pick on Freshie? For he's a nut, nothing but squirrels hang around him. Why do they all pick on Freshie? At every meal, he's a corpse, just the apples of they hate him, and they hate him. No matter what they do, it doesn't faze him. So why do they all call him Freshie? Because he ain't what he is, and isn't what he was.
Freshie, followed by Help, performed by Earl Gresh and his Gangplank Orchestra in 1925 on Sunshine 96.7 FM. Gresh and his orchestra's main port of call was, of course, St. Petersburg. And when the tours were done in the fall, the band would return and begin playing again at the Gangplank. The Gangplank was what today is the Jungle Parada Tavern. over on Boca Ciega Bay. Back then, the restaurant was one of the hottest spots around. Hot jazz and the newest songs played by Earl Gresh that people could dance to, and whiskey floated through a tunnel at low tide, giving dancers a way to wet their whistle, as long as they could keep it hush-hush. And good food, too. The Gresh Orchestra was a mainstay of the place. When the St. Pete Ballroom, the Coliseum, was opened in late 1924, Gresh was leading a small group there for a little while, but left to play the gangplank for its grand opening in December, staying there for the six-month entertainment season through April of 25, when it closed for the summer. Afterwards, they went out on tour and came back in the fall, staying in the gangplank into April of 1926, all the while still recording records periodically for Columbia. It would be a good time to know who were the folks that made up Earl's band at the time. I'll let you take that one, Jackson.
The Earl Gresh lineup was made up of Edward Bonley and Robert Simone on the trumpet, Ray Stillowell on the trombone, with Everett Stump, Fred Potter, Marriott Davis on the reed section, Gresh, who played the violin and was the band leader, Edward Bourne, who played the piano, William Owen played the banjo, Thomas Sneed on the brass bass, Norman Hansen was on the drums, and Frank Wilson was the vocalist in a few of the 1926 recordings. This was the lineup of the band, best we can tell, from 1925 to 1927.
That new singer, Frank Wilson, before joining the band at the gangplank, was a singer up in Chicago of note. But when he came down here to St. Pete and sang with the band, he was an instant success. Wilson was taken with the band on tour across the East Coast along with their other new talent in May, and they'd record a whole bunch of new songs for Columbia over 2 days' time. Here's the first of them. From May 14th, 1926, here is Frank Wilson singing the song Tenderly with Earl Gresh and the Gangplank Orchestra, then to be followed up by Ace in the Hole, here on Sunshine 96.7 FM.
Thank you.
A good instrumental by Earl Gresh and his orchestra called Ace in the Hole, recorded on May 14, 1926, superseded by the crooning of Frank Wilson on Tenderly. For those just joining in, you are listening to an hour-long radio documentary on Earl Gresh, a St. Pete area band leader that was incredibly popular and nationally famous 100 years ago, tracing his musical career and including recordings of him from as far back as 100 years ago to this very day. On June 30th, 1925. Joining me is Jackson Gresh, a descendant of Earl Gresh, who has painstakingly remastered all of these recordings you're hearing.
Chase, that was a truly fabulous set of songs right there we just got to hear. Frank Wilson singing was quite marvelous on Tenderly.
It very much was. I've loved it for a while now, and I especially love that we got a crooner from the Tampa Bay area recorded and, you know, accurately represented, you know, from as early as 26.
And Ace in the Hole has always been a pretty good favorite among some people with the Earl Gresh discography. I've talked to several people who have been familiar with his work, and Ace in the Hole seems to pop up as one that people remember hearing back in the day.
Quickly want to note there also that Tenderly was written by fellow band leader Abe Lyman. He likely knew Gresh at the time. They both probably interacted to some extent.
Very interesting. Wilson married after these sessions. Do you know any information on that?
I know that, like, after the, like, within, like, the next few days after these recording sessions, he actually got married and ended up, they went on tour to a different, to play a different show. And he and his bride ended up meeting back up with the band later after their honeymoon.
Aw, that's sweet. Now, here are some fun ones. Earl is now with the band playing the Pump Song. And you can hear his violin mimicking a donkey and a hand pump in this song. Then, the very next day, they recorded another gem called Papa Mustn't Do That on May 15th, 1926. Right now, on Sunshine 96.7 FM. Thank you.
he loved her and she loved him. Oh, how they got along. Till he'd begin to tickle her, then everything went wrong. She'd say, dear, listen here, I think you're just grand. I can't resist from being kissed, but there's one thing I can't stand. You can kiss me, you can love me, you can make a big fuss of me. But aha, tut tut, Papa mustn't do that. You can tease me, you can squeeze me, and you never need release me. But aha, wow, Papa mustn't do that. Though I can stand for everything you do, you're sweet as you can be. But for goodness sake, I beg of you, will you stop that tickling me? You can jolly, honey bunch me, you can pound me, pinch me, punch me. But aha, Papa mustn't do that.
Papa Mustn't Do That played right after the Pump Song by Earl Gresh and his Gangplank Orchestra from May of 1926.
What a fabulous pair of songs right there. Both of them made such great use of Earl Gresh's violin playing skills.
It really is like, you know, like just like some of the more funner sides of the band. I mean, it just, the whole band just has such a charisma to it, like overall, like whenever it plays.
Great performances definitely from the whole group.
Absolutely. Up next, here is the last recording by the band for a while. Scatter Your Smiles by Earl Gresh's Gangplank Orchestra. A second pianist is playing on this song, named Max Cortlander. He co-wrote this song and plays a good solo here. Frank Wilson also sings it. From May 15th, 1926, here is Scatter Your Smiles by Earl Gresh on Sunshine 96.7 FM.
Thank you.
Scatter Your Smiles by Earl Gresh and his Gangplank Orchestra from 1926. I'm Jackson Gresh, Earl's cousin's great-grandson, and you're listening to an hour-long tribute to his music here on Sunshine 96.7 FM. Earl was really popular internationally, having some of his music getting genuine Columbia Australian pressing, and numerous more were issued under pseudonyms in England and New Zealand. But his band was based out of St. Petersburg, Florida. The Gangplank refers to a popular restaurant in the town at the time. Take it over here, Jay.
Alright, fine. The Gangplank, or as you know it today, the Jungle Parada Tavern, was about the biggest spot for St. Pete area people to dance at and drink at. It was a speakeasy at the time with a lot of history, and it's still around today. Let's hear about it today from the owners. Here I am at the Jungle Parada Tavern, where a little over 100 years ago, this building opened as the Jungle Parada Building. Here on the west side of St. Petersburg laid one of the most popular eateries, nightclubs, and speakeasies of the city and country at large. 100 years back, its name was The Gangplank. Earl Gresh and his orchestra played here for the first few tourist seasons and became internationally popular because of it. I am joined here by Mark Brindle, the owner of the Jungle Parada Tavern. Here's some questions here. What stuff from the original Gangplank is still visible today?
I don't know enough about the original Gangplank. Like we talked about earlier, some people think it was the west side of the building where the, you know, ship and the sculpture and all that stuff is. That patio pretty much shows that it's a definite possibility that there was something going on down at the other end. Right off of Park Street, coming in here, the original speakeasy was through this doorway when it was a service station. But this is original here, coming into the service station with the desk. And that was a service door we made into a bookshelf for a secret entrance to the speakeasy that we're building, which has to do back to the Gangplank. And I don't know if the Gangplank was down at the end of the building or here, but as far as any of the gangster, Al Capone, Prohibition, all that stuff, we do know that a lot of that liquor during Prohibition was distributed right out here throughout the Tampa Bay area. And when we walk around, I'll show you where the tunnel was supposedly. Again, don't know for sure, but it does seem that they married bottles and float. They used to just right out here, not worry about getting in trouble or doing anything. Yeah. And the rumor is when they started getting pinched, they dug a tunnel under the building. You know, we're only 7 or 8 foot above sea level. Mm. And I don't know how different it was 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 years ago. Mm. But it was probably pretty similar. And it wasn't a tunnel like you think about a mining tunnel. Yeah. But they had dug underneath the building where your floor joists were above you, loading liquor during high tide out there to be distributed. So that is speculation. Mm. But makes sense. But for us, entertainment-wise, and just the regulars at the bar, you know, this neighborhood is a very special place, and I can't wait to see this, to share with the regulars, because everybody here, almost everyone here, asks about it. They come in with those questions. Capone, Babe Ruth. Once I bring up Earl Gresh, the people I talk to are gonna get online and start looking that up too. People are like sponges around here, and I love it. I leased this space and have continued to run JP Tavern as a local watering hole with all the enthusiasm and curiosity about the history, and trying to keep everything open, available, and with respect to its history. It's been 2015, August 1st, officially opened almost 11 years ago. All the rumors and all the stories and all the curiosity has just been the keystone of our regulars, and sitting down and just makes a great place that much better.
I do love the history, and I just, the whole vibe, everything about this place, the energy, no matter what you believe in, this is definitely a special place with a lot of history.
Well, this has been a great time talking with you here, and it's been a great opportunity to interview you. Thanks again, Mark. Once again, this is the Jungle Parada Tavern, located off of Park Street North and Elbow Lane North, on the west side of St. Pete.
And thank you. Love to know what you come up with, and I'm looking forward over the years to find out really what happened.
Months have passed since the last recording, and 1926 is over now. Now it's 1927. Earl Gresh's orchestra, despite its widespread popularity, eventually left the Gangplank itself. From there onwards, it played at the Palais Royal Hotel in St. Petersburg, and through early 1927, Gresh had a 3-month-long stint at the Vinoy Park Hotel in St. Pete, in which the band played a few radio spots for, and by April of 27, the lineup for Earl Gresh's orchestra had changed some members. Now it was 12 pieces. Frank Wilson also left the band without a singer when he left too. But now they have some more material for Columbia. They came in to play on May 5th. Being the song Where the Wild, Wild Flowers Grow, sung by the well-traveled studio singer Irving Kaufman on this session. This one is a real beauty here. We can't wait for you folks to hear it. From May 5th, 1927, Earl Gresh's orchestra played Where the Wild, Wild Flowers Grow.
Was Where the Wild, Wild Flowers Grow, played by Earl Gresh and his orchestra from May 1927. Sunshine 96.7 FM.
What an absolutely beautiful song.
It was such a well-done recording, and it truly, what a great send-off for their Columbia times. And lastly, that brings us to the two most elusive records from Earl Gresh's discography, the Path Day recordings. Sometime in May of 1927, for reasons not entirely clear, Earl Gresh ceased recording with Columbia Records and began recordings for Pathé Records. For their cheaper dime store labels, Pathé Actuel and Perfect Records. They recorded two sides that we know of, and neither were very big sellers, and neither were they advertised much at all. There was a significant drop in quality as these records were made cheaper, and Pathé itself had only just at that moment in 1927 started their electrical recording process. And the nature of the music itself has also changed quite a bit, from the more sing-along type dance music to a lot more hot jazz and instrumental type work. Even with this change, these last two still have quite a bit of fun to them. The first of these Pathé sides, and by far the more successful of the two, is the 1927 jazz tune White Ghost Shivers, played by Earl Gresh and his orchestra from May of 1927 on Sunshine 96.7 FM. That was White Ghost Shivers, played by Earl Gresh and his orchestra, from May of 1927, on Sunshine 96.7 FM. One of the very rare, as well as the final slides from Earl Gresh. You know, Chase, it almost sounds something of a Parting Ways song.
It's not really that ghostly, but it's really good stuff.
Yeah. And finally, we have Earl Gresh's most elusive recording to date. This is Earl Gresh's final recording, Deed I Do.
That was Deed I Do, played by Earl Gresh and his orchestra for Pathé Records in May of 1927 in New York, over Sunshine 96.7 FM, just known as his orchestra now. No longer of the Gangplank restaurant on the west coast of St. Petersburg. By about February 1928, Gresh hung up his baton and retired from the band. A number of reasons for this include the economy collapsing in Florida at large, but Gordon Gresh, Jackson's great-grandfather, hinted that Earl's wife was sick of him being on the road all the time. But the biggest reason, no doubt, had to do with Earl's new love, speedboat racing. Jackson, tell us a bit about this.
In 1928, Earl Gresh started a new passion, speedboat racing. And while things started off a little slow, he very quickly became very skilled and started winning race after race. He won 43 consecutive races. He set the outboard motor watercraft speed record in 1929 at 46 miles an hour. This legacy continued about till roughly about 1931, where he sold off the boat and used the money to build his next legacy, the St. Petersburg Wood Museum, or the Wood Parade. Here, Gresh showed off his passion for woodworking, a trade he learned at a young age, working in the Gresh family cigar factory. And while the Wood Parade started off small, being in Gresh's house making small knickknacks, he soon started making tackle boxes, fishing lures, and invented the wooden purse. He soon moved operations from his house to an 18th century style English cottage that he built in 1937 and became a major tourist attraction in St. Pete. And Earl Gresh would have numerous other hobbies during the 30s and into the 40s and 50s, from bowling to fishing. It was in the early 1950s when he met my great-grandfather Gordon, and they would later meet again, this time with my 4-year-old grandfather. The Wood Parade sadly was shut down not soon after that visit, and Earl Gresh went into retirement, starting the St. Petersburg Rod and Gun Club, remaining in St. Petersburg until his death in 1977. His death also ended up being on this day, June 30th, 1977. He died exactly 52 years after making that first Columbia recording.
Even though the Wood Parade is long gone now, the building is still alive and well. It's been used by different high-class restaurants over the decades, and is now known by one of those eateries as Sesh. The owner even dedicates a display case of Gresh memorabilia items, including his records, postcards, and more. Let's hear from Sesh now.
While Earl Gresh may be best remembered across the United States for what he did on the west side of St. Petersburg with the Gangplank, at a local level, he's probably best remembered for his historic home and tourist attraction on the east side of town, the Wood Parade. Located on 4th Street and 22nd Avenue North, over the last 60 years, it's become a perfect spot for many restaurants. Since 2023, the newest one has opened on the site, Sesh Restaurant and Brewery's newest location, entitled Sesh St. Pete. I am joined here by the owner, Matthew Powers, inside of Sesh, for a small interview about it.
Hi, thanks for having me. Matthew Powers, one of the owners here of the property. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have this opportunity to do this with you as well. First question really is, did you know anything really about the history of this place before you saw it on the market?
No, I didn't. I happened to see it because my kids went to school out on Snow Island, and I saw the sign up one day. I knew it as the Melting Pot, the previous restaurant. It was here forever. You know, I happened to see the sign up one day driving to school, and we were starting to look for another location, and then reached out and then got our first glimpse into it after that. It wasn't until afterwards, you know, I started doing my due diligence on the property, found all kinds of crazy stuff about the history and things. Didn't realize it until afterwards of how much history and went into this place.
What is the layout of the restaurant today compared to how it was from the original site or when you bought it?
We did change the bar area. The bar actually used to be here in the main lounge. It was in front of the fireplace, and the fireplace was actually covered up.
Oh, really?
It had like a wood wall in front of it. We didn't even realize it was there, you know, until I started taking the wood down. I'm like, well, there's bricks back here, you know? And it turns out these bricks actually came from Fort Dade, located on Egmont Key, back when they decommissioned it in the 30s, you know, so there's a pretty cool history just behind that.
Do you know which of the buildings in the complex was Earl's house and which one was the Wood Parade itself and the workshop?
So currently the building sits as one building. It's a U-shape. In the beginning, it was one original building, and it was the far building where the brew house is. And when you're in there, you can see how old that one is. We're guessing that one is over 100 years old. You know, we haven't found an actual date on when that was built, but that would have been his house, workshop to begin with. And then, you know, Earl being the entrepreneur that he was, you know, 4th Street used to be the main road. You know, we didn't have 275. We didn't have 34th Street. You know, this was the, everyone come down to St. Pete, they'd be staying here. So there was, you know, you still got Sunken Gardens as one of the last tourist, you know, attractions. There were a bunch of others, and Earl Gresh saw that opportunity to come in and take his woodwork and turn it into an attraction, hence the Wood Parade. That's when he built the building that we're in now, where the bar is and the main dining, he built himself. Hence all the crazy woodwork, the beams that look like the bottom of a boat, since he used to be a boat builder. So this became the museum and gift shop. You know, you bring them in through one side and then take them out through the other, like Disney does.
Have you, for like the other stuff, like the music, I mean, you know, you got the record here, but have you heard any of his music, really?
I found some on like YouTube back when I was doing, again, my deep dive, and then I was able to get this record and listen to it.
Yeah, it's real good stuff. And the display cabinet and all these items that you've now just laid out in front of us here. Now, this stuff is, I've seen some of this stuff here before, but a lot of this stuff I've not seen. I mean, I'm very familiar with the records. I got one copy of probably, that's Row, Row, Rosie.
Yep.
Well, I mean, you probably know a lot of this stuff better than me, so why don't you tell us what this is?
All right, so here's, you know, one of my favorites would be the picture of Lightning, which is the name of his boat that held one of his speed records. It's kind of cool to see. It was from a news article about his record back in the day. Of course, we've got, you know, some sheet music, the record. This one, this wood purse, apparently was a pretty popular high fashion item back in the day. The Gucci or the Prada purse back in the day.
Yeah, this is the thing that all the people have gone through before.
Yeah, we have this one, which is cool. This is the original program. It was actually given to me by the Gresh family. And it's kind of, it goes through, if you walk through it, it gives you, you know, the gist of what.
Overall. I hope that at some point, you know, this collection can be expanded upon. If I ever see anything else that's, you know, for sale otherwise, I might send it by you.
I never want to lure one of those pictures is kind of looking for.
Tell us about Sesh St. Pete these days. What's the restaurant like overall?
Sesh stands for a period of time doing something enjoyable with friends and family, and that's what we try and live up to with, you know, great food and beer. You know, it's kind of, you know, your local neighborhood pub. You got people who really, really love their craft. You know, it's something that Earl Gresh really loved his craft. So it's good for them to have, you know, they can craft their crafts here in a place that was built by a craftsman. We got 2024 Best Beer in Florida at the the Florida Beer Championship. And we won several other medals, too, for other beers. If anyone wants to come check it out, cool place to walk around. It's got a great atmosphere. It looks, I mean, when you walk in with the wood beams, it looks like an English pub, which is kind of what he was going for when he built it. Come see us. Have a drink with us.
Well, thanks very much, Matthew, for this opportunity to interview you. Again, this is Sesh Restaurant and Brewery, located off of 4th Street North in St. Petersburg, formerly Earl Gresh's Wood Parade. Earl Gresh's music, inventions, and home leaves a lasting legacy to this day. Many in town still remember his name, and know one thing or another about him. And we're both glad that we could do this for the 100th anniversary of Gresh's first record. But I think that's about it. All the recordings that you've heard of Earl Gresh in this broadcast is from Jackson's YouTube channel, The Gresh Music Archive. Almost all of his own digital transfers of the 78 RPM records by his great-grandfather's cousin, Earl. Again, The Gresh Music Archive. Go and check it out. Thanks also to Tim Huskisson for providing the transfer of Deed I Do, the last recording you heard. Without him, we wouldn't have the complete discography of Gresh's band to showcase today. As for now, we're glad that you've all been listening, and you'll hear me on future broadcasts. You may not hear Jackson again, but you'll definitely hear his records again in the future. Goodbye, and thank you, Jackson.
You too, and thank you.
This is Sunshine 96.7 FM, very truthfully yours, Chase Porter, signing off.